Jeeves and the Hard-Boiled Egg by P.G. Wodehouse.
Sometimes of a morning, as I've sat in bed sucking down the early cup of tea and watched my man Jeeves flitting about the room and putting out the raiment for the day, I've wondered what the deuce I should do if the fellow ever took it into his head to leave me. It's not so bad now, I'm in New York, but in London, the anxiety was frightful. There used to be all sorts of attempts on the part of low blighters to sneak him away from me. Young Reggie Foljam, to my certain knowledge, offered him double what I was giving him, and Alastair Bingham Reeves, who's got a valet who has been known to press his trousers sideways, used to look at him when he came to see me with a kind of glittery, hungry eye which disturbed me deucedly. Bally pirate, the thing, you see, is that Jeeves is so dashed competent. You can spot it, even in the way he shoves studs into a shirt. I rely on him absolutely in every crisis, and he never lets me down. And what's more, he can always be counted on to extend himself on behalf of any pal of mine who happens to be, to all appearances, knee-deep in the bullion. Take the rather rummy case, for instance, of dear old Bicky and his uncle, the Hard-Boiled Egg. It happened after I'd been in America for a few months. I got back to the flat latish one night, and when Jeeves brought me the final drink, he said, "Mr. Bickersteth called to see you this evening, sir, while you were out." "Oh?" I said. "Twice, sir. He appeared a trifle agitated." "What, pipped?" "He gave that impression, sir." I sipped the whiskey. I was sorry if Bicky was in trouble, but as a matter of fact I was rather glad to have something I could discuss freely with Jeeves just then, because things had been a bit strained between us for some time, and it had been rather difficult to hit on anything to talk about that wasn't apt to take a personal turn. You see, I had decided, rightly or wrongly, to grow a moustache, and this had cut Jeeves to the quick. He couldn't stick the thing at any price, and I had been living ever since in an atmosphere of bally disapproval till I was getting jolly well fed up with it. What I mean is, while there's no doubt that in certain matters of dress Jeeves' judgment is absolutely sound and should be followed, it seemed to me that it was getting a bit too thick if he was going to edit my face as well as my costume. No one can call me an unreasonable chappy, and many's the time I've given in like a lamb when Jeeves has voted against one of my pet suits or ties. But when it comes to a valet's stalking out a claim on your upper lip, you've simply got to have a bit of the good old bulldog pluck and defy the blighter. "He said he would call again later, sir."
"Something must be up, Jeeves."
"Yes, sir."
I gave the moustache a thoughtful twirl. It seemed to hurt Jeeves a good deal, so I chucked it.
"I see by the paper, sir, that Mr. Bickersteth's uncle is arriving on the Carmantic."
"Yes?"
"His Grace, the Duke of Chiswick, sir."
Well, this was news to me, that Bicky's uncle was a duke. Rum, how little one knows about one's pals. I had met Bicky for the first time at a species of beano or jamboree down in Washington Square, not long after my arrival in New York. I suppose I was a bit homesick at the time, and I rather took to Bicky when I found that he was an Englishman and had, in fact, been up at Oxford with me. Besides, he was a frightful...